are sort of deceptively simple. I think the main thrust of the one this week was find ways to be kind to people throughout your week. And the point of these exercises is not necessarily so much being able to do them as remembering to do them and doing them consciously and being aware of what sort of effects it has. So, does anybody have anything they would like to share from this past week? Sarah?
Yeah, I had a kind of an interesting experience. I like talking to people a lot, so it usually isn't too difficult for me to say hello and smile and, you know, chat a little bit. But one thing that sticks out in my mind that I tried to do was I live in a senior housing, and there are a lot of grumpy people there, I'm going to say. And there was one woman who even goes around, you know, kind of with her mouth down. And I made a point when I saw her of giving her a smile, and I got a smile back. And that was a big deal. That was a big deal. So the other things was like when I went to the bank and I had to see the teller. I try to relate to people as people and not just, oh, she's a teller. But that one thing that stuck out was about the woman that usually goes around really grumpy, and I got a smile out of her, and that was very nice. Okay.
How did it make you feel?
Oh, good, yeah. Because it was a little bit, a little scary, actually, because I didn't know how she was going to respond, yeah.
So it was interesting this week. It's certainly nice to be nice. it's also pretty simple, but it's just like taking that effort, of course. And I found each time, because of the lesson part, you know, I just thought about, you know, being a contribution to them and not about me, you know. But then also, especially this afternoon at Costco, I helped some guy in a wheelchair load something into it. I mean, big deal, you know, but a little thing. And he said, oh, thanks. Yeah, I said, sure. And walked away. And I just, like, it was like, you know, it's like, what a right, it's like, what a great, what an easy way to feel great, you know. So it's like talking about last week. I don't know what the phrase was, but the highway to happiness or something is service.
I missed the last class, so I actually wasn't sure what we talked about. But I did receive the email. It talked about those two keys. It's interesting that my friend actually, this is how I feel amazing. I feel universe works. She sent me something yesterday. Actually, it's this morning, and I actually posted on my Facebook because I feel it's so good. She said, the most precious gift we can offer anyone is our attention. When mindfulness embraces those we love, they will bloom like flowers. Mm-hmm. I feel it's on the similar line. And what's the impact on me is I realize because living in the modern world, we can easily to get trapped by our cell phone or our own mind. And after I read this one, is actually I feel giving the attention to other people. Maybe it doesn't really mean to kind to people, but just listen to more what they say, pay attention to them instead of think what I want to say and wait for them to finish so that I can say. It is a shift.
That's a very good point that you make, and I think particularly the point that you made, so I'll just underline it, how often we're waiting just till the other person gets done to be able to bring in what we want, and we're not really engaged with them. It's not about them. We keep it all about us. So very good. That's a great point.
I thought one of the most fun things that I've experienced with this is to be in the grocery line and notice the name tag on the clerk, and then when she says, have a good day, you say, have a good day, Sarah, and they go.
I was just thinking that I received a lot of kindness this week, and I'm not really tuned into receiving kindness. I serve a lot, and that makes me feel good, but then it was my birthday, and I got calls from people that I've been ignoring for over a year, and still they remembered me, and it just made me feel good. And so I was kind because I called him back. And but then there was a big reward for getting in touch with him again, and I made a resolution that I am going to stay in touch. So also receiving kindness is important.
I told you all about my grandmother's last week, and the second one, who spent her whole life giving to everybody. At the end of her life, we actually sort of had to train her to receive, because she was really not, even when she was bedridden, she was not very good at just letting other people take care of her, because she was always taking care of other people. But it was a very good thing for everybody, because she needed to just relax and let us take care of her, but it was also good for us because we got to experience what we're all talking about in the joy of helping somebody else. And so, you know, it's a kindness to accept from other people when they, you know, really honestly, joyfully want to give you something and not just block it because you're trying to be all, you know, self-sufficient or whatever it is. You know, don't worry, just let them help you. You know, it's both sides. You know, everybody benefits from this, so play whichever side you're on to the best of your ability. Any other comments?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that this fits in so beautifully. Tandava said it's a simple message, and it is. All of these lessons we keep saying, they're deceptively simple. But when we realize that every single facial gesture, every time we call somebody by a name or we open a door, every bit of that is something that really redirects our consciousness towards solution orientation, upliftment, positive energy, and it carries that magnetism with it. So every one of these stories are just stories of what it really means to literally be changing our consciousness and the consciousness of everyone that we're interacting. All these simple but beautiful little stories have such profound meaning to them. So, okay, Stephen. Stephen, our topic tonight is non-attachment. And Stephen will start, then Lahari will speak, then I'll speak.
Hello there. This is I had an interesting experience just a few minutes ago. I had prepared for a particular topic for this class. You know, generally I like to put them in my calendar and I put the title of what my particular part is going to be, and I have it there, and it gives me a reminder. And I prepared. Actually, I was reading. I listened to a talk by Swami Kriyananda. I went online. I found all these other resources related to Ananda. And Shanti just told me as I walked in 10 minutes ago what my actual topic was. And it's interesting because it got me thinking about two things in particular. One is that I can honestly say, and I can say it objectively, it was perfectly fine with me in that I really was, I'm not attached to what I talk about in a given class, which is a nice thing. And then I see the contrast between that and other areas of life where I seem quite attached to what's going on or what I feel I'm not getting or would like or God knows what else. You know, there's so much that comes into play in our twisted psyches. Swami Kriyananda wrote many, many books, and he wrote many, many articles and booklets, and he approached the same subject over and over again in different ways with different overlays. And if you spend enough time around Ananda, or even not that much, you'll hear from a given teacher these same phrases that come over and over again, and they're just central to the culture here, but very helpful spiritually. One of those is practice when it's easy. So non-attachment is the kind of thing where you can certainly practice when it's easy, and it holds true in other areas of spiritual development, where we just seem to naturally be able to do something. And it is good to then really go with that flow, do as much as we can. This is my opinion, and I believe, from my personal experience, and I believe it's expandable, that we can just, we ought to, we benefit from using that knowledge of seeing, oh, it's easy here, let me just continue to do this and get some experience with this practice, and then just see if I can, you know, when it's gut-wrenching on this side and I just don't seem to know what to do, perhaps I can remember that, oh yeah, these were the steps I took. And when one is, see, when you're, and this, there's a great irony to this topic of non-attachment, because when you're non-attached, you have perspective. And it's much easier to simply do what's appropriate. When you're attached, you lose your perspective and you're just kind of lost in emotion generally. That's my experience of it. I get lost in emotion and the emotions just take me over. Some of us are more prone to emotional swings. Those of us who are can perhaps relate to that feeling of being lost at sea and kind of not knowing what to do with it all. So I'll leave it at that, because Lahari is really going to cover the main body of that topic, and I know Shanti will do summation of that. My segment is dealing with the introduction that Swami Kriyananda wrote, which is really fascinating. So we've had two classes that seem to be, at a certain level, I mean, very important and really helpful, but preliminary to these other lessons. For some particular reason, he chose to introduce now the reason that he wrote this course. And the reason that he wrote this course, according to this introduction, first couple of pages of this week's lesson, is that Yogananda talked about, and Swami Kriyananda, over the decades of Ananda, continued to reiterate that Yogananda had talked about the coming hard times. I was listening, not today, but fairly recently, to an older talk of Swami Kriyananda's from the early 1980s, and he was bringing up that very subject. And it was from 1980, and he was saying, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the decade of the 80s, this is what's going to happen. Because Yogananda had talked about this for a long time. Yogananda left his body in 1952. That was only 30 years afterwards, even less. And yet, it still hasn't come. But by all indications, I mean, let's put it this way. When a great master, when an avatar says something, it is true. There's no deviation there. By definition, what they offer is, what they utter is truth. So I would imagine that's one of the main reasons that Swami Kriyananda kept saying that Master was talking about how difficult times were going to get. And he talks here that Yogananda oft quoted that the depression that's coming will dwarf that which occurred in the 1930s. We have parents or grandparents who lived through that. We've heard stories. Apparently, much, much more is coming. And then there are all these signs that indicate things are happening, and yet we've not experienced it. Most people don't really want to think about it for good reason. Like, who would really want to think about that? The emphasis is twofold from what I see in the lesson. One is the need for community. That is the solution for whatever comes, is to develop communities. The movie Finding Happiness was about developing communities, and in particular, spiritually oriented communities. Ananda has survived, perhaps alone among those communities or communes that started up 40 or more years ago, because of the spiritual power of Yogananda and because of the practices that those who are part of Ananda all share, particularly the practice of Kriya Yoga and the path of Kriya Yoga. So there's incredible power to it. And in addition, Swami says community. He doesn't make a distinction in these lessons between spiritual and non-spiritual. In the Finding Happiness movie, he was asked whether there was a possibility of a community, whether communities could really survive if they were non-spiritual. And his answer was, in essence, I don't think so. I'm paraphrasing dramatically. Regardless, the need for community. But this idea of non-attachment, no matter what happens, that is, if we're able to practice when it's easy, even though the world seems quite chaotic compared to some monumental cataclysm, it's easy now. If we are willing to adopt these practices and take, you know, baby steps or whatever seems appropriate and just begin the journey, as they say, right, the journey of 1,000 steps begins with the first step. If we're willing to take these initial steps now, we will have an easier time. this concept, this practice, this great discipline, spiritual discipline of non-attachment is so immensely helpful. It enables us ultimately to break the bonds that hold us to this smaller identity and allow our consciousness to expand to truly internalize an understanding and a practice of offering all that we are and all that we have to God, and to broadening and deepening that connection which we crave. We get so fearful of losing ourselves or of losing what we have. I don't know if it's actually easier if everything's taken away from you. Maybe it is, and maybe that's why these things come. Regardless, whatever steps we're willing to take now, whatever practices we're willing to employ, we will not only benefit from personally, but more importantly, with that stability, that spiritual platform, we will be able to help others. And this is something Swami goes on to talk about in these lessons. We will have the strength, we will have the stability, we will have the anchoring, the rooting, the spiritual depth, and the grace of God and Guru with whom this relationship we've been cultivating, to then go forward when others who don't have such good fortune, such good karma, are really suffering. Marilyn is talking about serving. She serves a lot, it's true, and others serve a lot. And this is the beauty of service. We offer to others, we offer to the God in others. I mean, the whole concept of the namaskar is the divinity in me bows to the divinity in you. It's the same with service. It's connecting with the divine and offering that to others. So I'll leave it at that. It's probably a good launching point because I have a feeling Lahari has a lot of good things to say.
Yeah, reminding us the idea, Swami, starting this thinking that hard times can come and how will we be prepared and what will we do. As Stephen was talking, I thought it really, Swami gives us so many of these essential keys of the spiritual life in these lessons. And this path is called self-realization because it's about realizing who we really are. Every week we have something called the Festival of Light. And we say again and again, who are we in reality? For what end were we made? And it's really about realizing the soul, our oneness. Yoga means union. It means oneness. So realizing that we are a soul, we're part of everything that is. Our consciousness is a spark of the infinite, omnipresent, good, perfect love, freedom of God. And we simply have forgotten. We've just forgotten. And one of the reasons we've forgotten is that we've become identified, we've become attached. Our consciousness came from God, completely open, free, and this experience of Maya and delusion has us living as a soul in these little bodies, and we forget. We just forget. And one of the beauty of yoga is the goal is union, but it's also the path. How do we get there? How to reclaim that infinite freedom of the soul step by step by step? As we're saying, you know, these keys are giving us little ways to practice and smiling at people and seeing what happens, how it feels. Shanti said the energy raises a little bit. Oh, that's good. I like that. That's the right direction. The spiritual life we hear again and again, Stephen talked about at Ananda we have these little phrases that over the years we keep hearing them, but we're really glad to hear them because they remind us. And one is the spiritual path is directional. And if you're pointed in the right direction and moving forward with energy, you're going to get there. There are some good stories, some of which I'll share, that Swami did. First of all, everybody close their eyes for a minute and just raise a finger or a hand to indicate if you did read the lesson, raise your hand. Okay, so I'll add some new stories to the existing ones. If you all didn't have time to read the lesson, I would be sure to draw out those stories a little longer, but I'll just touch on them. So I'll add some new material. When I first came to Ananda, I had sort of a, you can open your eyes whenever you want to. I had a, or you can keep them closed if you want to. I was at a point where Divine Mother really gave me an opportunity to see the value of renunciation. And I'd had a series of things that didn't work very well, and I had a, you know, it all sort of happened at once. Everything parted, like the sea parted, and I was supposed to move from one land to another because my job changed by some very weird thing, and then it was blocked. My new job was blocked by a person betraying me, which was odd, and then my relationship ended, and everything was changing around me. And I was in quite a state of suffering, and I remember praying, okay, God, I used to remember you were out there, help. You know, I just need you to guide me. So I talked to a friend who had discovered Ananda, and I visited with her in California. I was on the East Coast. And up I went to Ananda Village, and well, definitely got my attention. It was very dramatic between my state of suffering to this very, very great joy that I felt and observed and all the people I saw at Ananda Village and the meditation practices. And Divine Mother just sort of, it was like I was a drowning little puppy, and she kind of put me, or a kitten, you know, put me by the back and just lifted me up, you know, to get me out of the muck, and showed me, you know, a very wonderful, bright, joyous place. So I just said, this is it. All that other stuff, I'm finished. I don't want any more of that. This is it. It was just the time of my soul, the time of my life. And so I moved and became a brahmachari, you know, a nun, and said, I don't want relationships anymore. That doesn't do it. I don't care about the career anymore. That doesn't do it. I don't really want money. Never really cared that much. And let me just leave it all there. This is all I want. So it was a time, a really quite blessed time. And what it reminded me of, you know, I had one of those dramatic things. I'm living in a trailer, and I don't have any money, and I don't really care. And if I need shoes, I go to the Goodwill store. And perfectly, you know, never been happier than I could recall. Maybe when I was a little tiny child, before my karma hit. You know, that astral kind of grace you have for the first few years. But I just was so happy. And the blessing of that was, you mean I can be happy without all those things that I thought I needed? Without all those things that I used to be attached to? You mean I can be happy if I don't have a relationship? I can be happy if I don't have any money? I can be happy if I don't have a job? It was so refreshing for my soul to remember that's who I am. I am happiness. I am joy. You know, it's not these other things that I have to be and do and go and in order to get there. All that's gone, and I am that. So I recommend if any of you ever have the chance, you know, to do, we try annually to have a seclusion, you know, to go to a place where you just sort of let most of it go. And you just see how happy you can be when you go inside and you have practices and you have an uplifting environment. Stephen mentioned, Swami says in this lesson, something that again at Ananda, year after year we hear different ministers get up, and year after year I remember for a while and I practice it every night, and then I forget a while and then it comes around again. And that is, at the end of every day, make a big bonfire. You know, we have these fire ceremonies that we do, the ancient mantras, and they're all very lovely that we do together. But just at night, you know, we can do our Kriya practice, which is like an inner fire that's going on. If you don't know Kriya, or even if you do, just, you know, when you're lying in bed, I practiced it in times, and it helps so much. Because I don't really notice when I'm getting attached to little things very much. You know, I had a plan for this, I thought it would go this way, and then suddenly I'm going to sleep, but I'm still holding on to that. I wake up in the morning, I still have the same thing going, you know, I've got this plan, I'm doing this thing, and I'm just sort of identifying with an outward flow of energy, and often it's a good energy, it's service or something like that, doing something good for someone else, but I don't feel free when that attachment is on me.
even if it's a good thing, if I'm attached, it feels there's a little shadow on the sun. The first lesson I learned at this, I was, I think, 8 or 9 years old, and I never really wanted that much stuff, so it was pretty easy. But anytime I wanted something, my parents got it for me, and it was my birthday, and I really wanted something. I wanted a record player. And I really wanted that record player. And we went to, it was our summer vacation, I have a birthday in the summer, so we were at the swimming pool playing with the other children. I mean, some of the most fun things, but I couldn't really be there because I was thinking, will I get that record player? I hope I get that record player. What if I don't get that record player? What, I really like the red record player. It was just like this all day long. And it was the first time I'd had that as a child, and I thought, ooh, that is yucky. I don't want to be thinking, you know, I missed all the fun swimming at the pool because I was just, so I just kind of, early on, you know, I don't really want to go there. I don't really want to get into that world of getting attached with desires. But it unravels as it does. You know, we've put energy into our attachments, and the same kind of energy has to sort of unwind us from those attachments. You know, it can go quickly, breaking the bonds, like Tandava spoke in the chant, nothing on earth can hold me. You know, we really can get our energy moving with our practice and our service and break through those little tentacles of holding. We can cast it into the fire with a lot of energy and gain a lot of remembrance of our freedom. But, you know, also it's the path of winding and unwinding. And part of the unwinding part, Swamiji talks about, you know, some people say, great, I'm going to be non-attached. I'm not going to be attached to anyone. I'm not going to worry about anything. I'm just going to live in my own little world here, and I'm non-attached. But you see it starts to get dry and disconnected. I was trying to work at that in the early years. Yeah, that was suffering to have relationships, so I'm going to be unattached. I'm not going to have any of those anymore. I'm not going to let anybody get too close. You know, let's not do that because that hurts. So let's just, you know, that's non-attachment. And then I read what Yogananda said. He said, many people say that non-attachment means you're not attached to anyone. He said, but I've learned that my way, the best thing that works for me, is to be attached to everyone. And I had to meditate on that a little bit. What does that mean? You know, don't stop my love and my care here because I'm not attached, but just let it keep expanding so that it's care, it's compassion, it's love, but it's impersonal, you know, which is a way to help serving God and others, loving God and others, instead of just my friend, you know, and having a certain condition on the feeling that that relationship has. I love the stories Swami tells in this. I was reading about non-attachment in the lesson as we went along, and I was thinking, oh, I know what, I'll tell that story, one of my favorite stories. And then very next, he told that favorite story, so I can't resist. I'll probably tell it a little bit differently because I've heard it over the years differently. But it's the one about Sukdeva, who was the son of Vyasa, who wrote the Gita. So very high souls, born into a very high family. And as a baby in his mother's womb, his father, a wise guru, was already teaching him, the story goes. So he's born. By 6 years old, he says, bye, Dad, I'm going to go find my guru. Well, Vyasa's thinking, this is my child. He's going out, what, into the forest? He could get eaten by tigers. You know, he has this concern for him. So he says, well, stay home, son. I'm a guru. I'm a master. I have all these students. You just be one of my students. And the little boy looked at him and said, oh, no, you're poisoned with Maya. You have attachment to me. I'm running away. So his father said, all right, well, then I'll help you, because he wasn't that attached. So he sent him to a great sage who was also a king. His name was Raja, which is King Janaka. And that particular soul, for those of you who are interested in reincarnation and who was what in a past life, that soul was, Yogananda says, was Lahiri Mahashaya in that current life, was this great king who was also a renunciate. Well, so the little son is on his journey, and he's got his spiritual books that his father has, and now he's going to meet his guru. He's going to learn all the great lessons he's going to get. He knows about it, you know, from his father. He's going to get great enlightenment and he's ready for it. So he goes off and he's traveling and he finds out, you know, where the king is, and he's guided there and he starts approaching. And in his mind, he's a renunciate. You know, he's already 6 years old, but a yogi from many lives. So he's thinking, I don't want anything of this world. And he gets a little closer and he sees, wait a minute, there's a palace up there. I hope this guy doesn't have anything to do with palaces. So he gets a little closer and he's ushered into the king. Well, sure enough, the king is not a servant, which would have well served this guy's interest, but he's sitting on the throne. He's the king. So the guy's already thinking, I don't know how this is going to work, but okay. So the king says, sit down, let's talk about God now. So he goes on talking about God and the teachings of self-realization and yoga and how bliss is yours and how divine love is yours and how the soul is, you know, infinitely free and how God loves us so much that he cares for everything. There's never any reason to worry, and we're in Divine Mother's lap and she's just giving us all this love and everything's wonderful, and he's just enjoying this talk very, very much. But then a man comes into the room and says, King, there's a fire in the kingdom. So the king says, I'm talking about God now with this young man. And how far away is it? Oh, it's a couple of miles. Fine, fine, fine. It goes right back to talking about God. So a little bit later, another man comes in. It's getting closer. The fire's getting bigger. So he said, well, you know, we're talking about God. Just, you know, tell me. Well, finally, the third time, he says, the fire is in the kingdom. It's coming closer. And the young man looks up and sees the flames are rippling all above the windows. They don't even know how they're going to get out alive. And so he looks at the king and he doesn't understand why he's not moving. And then he looks at his precious books that he brought, the only thing he has in the whole world, and he grabs his books like this, ready to run. And the king says, ah, who's attached? You know, you care about those books where I, you know, my kingdom could have burned and I really wasn't that concerned. I was talking about God. I was in God. So he taught him a lesson. And Swamiji says, you know, we learn on this path. Yogananda did not live a life without material things. Swami Kriyananda did not live a life without material things. Kings do not, but they can be wise. It's not what you possess, it's the attitude you have about it. If you're identified with it and you think, I am my car, it gets a dent, it's kind of a big deal. If you think, I am a soul and I happen to be driving around in this car, oh, it got a dent, oh well. You know, things come, things go, things come. I used to, you know, in building, in sort of setting up housekeeping, you know, you have these little treasures that people give you or you find, and you set them up. And whenever one of them would break, I would feel this little something. And I've trained myself over time, you know, to just say, you know what? Things come and things go. Things come and things go. And on the spiritual life, you even, you know, people come and people go. I know even in ministry, you know, I've lived in different centers and things, and some of my teachers were really good at saying, you know, Yogananda said, devotees may come and devotees may go. You know, nothing is yours. Sister Gyanamata said, everything must go, even the things that hurt no one, everything must go, because that's not who we are. You know, Swami reminds us that death is the final exam, he calls it. And these stories, you know, we've lived with this realization that any time this world could have a nuclear bomb, Yogananda said there'd be hard times as we started this lesson, what would you do about it? You know, would I be afraid? You know, that's kind of where most of us started. We started hearing about it years ago, and it's like, uh-oh, that's going to hurt, or I'm afraid, what could happen, or I'm going to see other people suffer. What do I do? So there was a little lack of freedom. Over the years, we've had some time to play with it. And hearing Swami say, death is the final exam. Are you ready to leave this world in freedom and in joy? Or are you going to just grab on so tight that every little thing, you know, is going to hurt? An example he gives of a woman who had a nice new dress, and something got spilled on it. And she got so upset, as if she'd been in a really, like a car crash accident and was losing her life. because she was identified with the dress, you know, and even to be identified with the body isn't that different than being identified with the dress, because we're wearing it for now, and the soul comes in and out of the particular suit of clothes that we have on. One of the ways of unwinding that Swami brings out here is we're used to being attached. It's a habit we have. We know, as long as we can remember, we've had attachments. That's kind of the way we've been. That's just true. So he said, fine, no problem. Just become attached to good things. That's one way to just shift the direction a little bit. Be attached to God. Be attached to goodness. And if you find yourself being attached to something bad, look at the opposite thing and say, great, I'm going to be attached to that instead. In those early days living in a seclusion retreat, actually, in a little room, we were given a karma yoga project of cleaning the bathrooms. You know, one of those great humility building things. I mean, they were really gross. It was mold and everything around. And it was perfect for, you know, spiritual attitude building. Okay, I am awake and ready. I am joyful. I'm energetic. I'm cleaning this mold. And it was gross, but I'm happy. I am free. You know, it was a great little, you know, practice that we were doing. But it was getting a little boring, you know, and after a while it took a long time. And so we got to the point where it was clean, and we looked around and we went, you know what? It could be a lot better. I thought, it could be beautiful. I like beauty. It could be beautiful. So there was nothing, no claws or anything. But there was manzanita, lots of manzanita bushes. So we went out and we cut manzanita. I cut manzanita and put it in the windows and decorated the whole thing with manzanita. And then I went home that night and I thought, oh boy, that was fun. I really loved that manzanita. And I went, uh-oh, I'm attached. I'm attached to beauty. Look at what I did. I'm trying to be non-attached, and there I was. I was really sad about that because I was working so hard on the non-attachments. And the next time I saw Swami, I said, Swamiji, I'm attached to beauty. He said, oh, yes, I am too. So I had to think about that a little, read a little bit more. And it was beauty's an aspect of God. So to be attached to that from where I was a definite right direction to be attached to something good and uplifting and, you know, much better than many of the other attachments. So it's just a habit, you know, and just to try and pick the good ones. These little keys are great opportunities for taking the little steps that lead to success. Another one of those goodies that we'll hear over and over again, I never tire of it. A saint is a sinner who never gave up, you know. The only key to success ultimately is that we don't give up. We keep trying, moving in the direction and going. And then I love this. If you're still not able to be attached to the good things, then you're just plain attached to the bad things. I want that ice cream. I'm trying not to eat it. I want that ice cream. I'm trying not to eat it. I'm going to eat that ice cream. Now what? Swamiji reminds us, do it with God. You know, see God as the doer. God is eating this ice cream through me. God made me eat this ice cream. God made this dream. It's your fault, God. It's all yours. It's easy to say God is the doer when something wonderful happens, isn't it? Everything goes well. Some great uplifting thing occurs. You know, we're able to do something great for somebody or something. Oh, thank you, God. You know, you were there. Obviously, you were there then. I couldn't have done it alone. You did it. You did that. That was great. It was wonderful. Something bad happened. I must have done it. It's a little... So see God, no, God did that. And the thing Swami said is the reason it works is that if you're doing something with God, whatever it is, you're including that divine consciousness at least at the edges. And it seeps in as you just think, God, you're eating this pint of ice cream if that's what you're doing, or a gallon of ice cream, or whatever it is that you're doing that you don't really, you know, it's not really good for you, you don't really... in your highest self want to do it, but, you know, we've got our attachments, we've got our desires. And God, we're doing this together. How do you like this ice cream, God? You know, I have a thing about hot fudge sundaes. When I was younger, I had more of a thing. And I read that Yogananda used to take Dayamata, who was one of his nuns, who he gave a lot of administrative responsibility for keeping his work going. And she was very, you could sort of get a sense of her as being really kind of strict about what she did. You know, she wanted to be sure to be really right. And he would take her out and tell her to eat a hot fudge sundae with him, you know, because she desired it, but she wouldn't let herself go there. And he'd say, come on, let's have a hot fudge sundae, you know. And she got to do that with her guru. And that uplifting influence is the very thing that lifts us out of the lower attachments and allows us to become not so attached. There's one more story, and I'll end. I don't know how long I've gone, probably too long. But there's one dear one. I was living at Ananda Village, and I wasn't really good for much of anything in terms of service, but I did have some office works in my past, and they had a need for somebody to answer the phone and do some filing. And I loved the teachings, and Swamiji was kind enough to let me work at Crystal Clarity, which is where the books were published, and he was doing writing, and a lot of writing in those days. When he would be finishing a book, he would invite some of us from the publishing house over and, you know, really just out of kindness, say, why don't you read this and tell me what you think? You know, well, we could hardly think. You know, we would just be reading it and feeling, you know, this uplifting energy. But we were there late one night. We'd come over right after work. My husband at the time and I were both working there, and we came over and stayed and stayed, and time sort of went away. We weren't really aware of time because here we were with our spiritual teacher. We were reading about yoga and all the things that can do, and we were so, you know, in an uplifted state, we forgot about food. But sure enough, it came time. Swami said, well, thank you, that, you know, time to for my meditation now, so it could have been 10:30 or 11 o'clock. And we walked upstairs. We went out through his kitchen. So we walked upstairs. As soon as we got upstairs, we were famished. We were so hungry. I mean, we were just like feeling starving. So I went over to the cupboard, and I thought, I don't know if I should take a cracker from this cupboard. There's nobody here to ask. But you know what? I'm starving, and I think I'm just going to do it anyway. So I walked over, and I opened the cabinet like this. And Swamiji happened just to come up in the kitchen at that moment for who knows why, but he came up, and there I was kind of looking for a cracker, thinking, can I take one cracker or not be in trouble? And he looked at both of us with such deep compassion. He said, oh, I didn't know you were hungry. Like, why didn't you tell me? I'm so sad that you feel like you have to be a beggar in my home and go get one cracker. I mean, it was just this wave of compassion and love, you know, and I just kind of stopped in my tracks and, you know, just took that in, you know. I mean, God loves us so much, doesn't even want us to have to feel desire at all, because, you know, the fullness of everything we need, God wants to give to us if we, you know, and our attachments and desires create a little static, like electricity, like on a cell phone, and you don't get very good coverage. It's all crackly. That's kind of what we do when we have these desires. We're saying, God, I don't trust you. I don't think you're going to give me what I need, so I'm going to be attached, and I'm going to want to have what I don't have because I don't think you're going to give it to me.
Let me just say, I mean, given everything that Stephen and Lahari have said, that it's essential to remember in every moment with each of these lessons, really with every moment on the spiritual path, whatever it is we're doing, that what the goal is here. And our goal, every one of us, because we're here, so that's a given, is to really feel as much inspiration, as much at one with that divine flow that we talk about in terms of these 8 attributes, I forget now who said it, but that you are happiness, that you are love, that you are contentment. Very different than just feeling it for a moment as you come and go, but that you really begin to recognize that as the essence of who you are. That's what we're all doing here. So all of these lessons, whatever it is we're talking about, whatever effort we're making it because we know, those of us who are here, who are seeking, we understand that there's some other way I was just saying this, I think in Sunday service there is some other way to live other than how we've been taught, habits we've fallen into, that in fact, just by the very nature of practicing those, will lead us towards this path of feeling more at peace and more at ease. So when we talk about, and we did it last week with kindness, and each week there will be a different subject, but when we talk about non-attachment, we're saying, how is it that we can have the things we want or need or whatever that is for each of us? The thing itself is not what's harmful. So I look around, some people live in big, beautiful homes. Other people don't need that. Some people have two pairs of shoes in their closet. Some people have 32 pairs of shoes in their closet or more. Some people need the love of other people. Other people don't need that so much. People need others' approval. If we just talk about it at the physical plane, it almost starts sounding silly. But when we think of all the things we need as human beings, not so silly. I mean, we're all here with those. So there's two points that I'd like to make. One is there's a big difference between non-attachment and indifference, and there's a very big difference between a non-attachment and feigned non-attachment or indifference. So it is essential that we all say to ourselves, where am I on this path? Because we're using these words so much, non-attachment, it is very difficult to be not attached to anything. You just watch yourself, all of us, as we go through the day, how many different things we would like to have in a certain place, in certain order. We're sure one way's better or the other. To rid ourselves of any attachment to any of that is very challenging. And the worst thing that we can do, and one of the real pitfalls on a spiritual path, is to pretend we're there before we are. Or to beat ourselves up for not quite being there. Just today in my office, I saw a woman who I know very well, and this woman's lived with, her husband's an alcoholic, and he's been an alcoholic their entire relationship, and he gets sober for a little while, then he drinks again, and he gets sober. It's been going on for years and years. But in the last few years, she's really dived deeply into her own path, and she's been working working with her own codependence, but there's a program for that, and I'm just blocking what the name of it is. So it's not AA, it's not Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's for the person who's living with the alcoholic. I'm sorry, Al-Anon, thank you, yeah. And she's grown so much spiritually, and she's a beautiful soul. So she wrote me an email about 3 weeks ago, and she said to me, I'm in Minnesota now with my mom. She had a massive stroke. And she was just later this month about to move her mother out here. They were going to be spending the last years of her mother's life together. She got her this adorable apartment. I went through all this with her in our sessions together. Boom, her mother has this massive stroke. And oh, I just felt so much sadness when I read the email. I just knew the price tag, the emotional price tag of that for her, and the loss of a dream that she had. But when so now she's back just for a week or two to sort of collect herself, and she'll head back there to many things. I mean, her mother having the stroke, to being 20 degrees below zero and on and on, and living in this hospital. And she started talking to me about, oh, I felt so terrible because I could see all the ways I was attached. It was really hard to let go of the idea of mom being out here, and that I know that's not how I should be. And I had to stop her very early on, because those shoulds are the way that we make the spiritual path so narrow and so impossible to be on that we can very easily fall off one side or the other. Now, I'm not contradicting anything that we've said, but I'm saying I want to affirm what Lahari said. The path is directional. And all our goal is to make sure that we're putting one proverbial foot in front of the other over and over and over. And that if we hold these ideals, if we say to ourselves sometimes, what's the worst thing that could happen? Really, I mean, even if we asked ourselves, what if I lost my home tonight? And to really take that out to its end point. Really, what if I lost my home? Or all those what ifs, what is the worst thing that can happen? Excuse me. Most of the time, we would find out, because we're all seekers, because that's why we're here, that our soul, the main purpose of this life, our main desire to be free, free of our need for all of these things in the outside world, for us to feel that we're happy, that we're contented. I don't mean happy like ha-ha happy. I mean joy, joyful, blissful. We would see if we followed those through. Many things could happen in this world. We could lose a lot. What if everybody goes home tonight and said, Shanti didn't say one thing of any meaning. That was the worst talk I've ever heard. What if that happened? I've tried this on many times. My biggest fear, based on all of what I've come through, standing up, making a fool out of myself, disappointing people, having this talk go out on the internet and thinking that people might laugh at it. You see, these are all attachments, and they're, you know, we're sort of in at least college, if not graduate school, of spiritual studies, everybody who's in this room. So the tests aren't easy. I wouldn't care all that much if I lost my home. I'm certain of it. I'd miss my little Volvo if it was in a bad accident, but I wouldn't think I was going to be less happy about it. But I love that car, and I take great care of it, and I polish it, and I shine it, and I don't let people eat sloppy food in it, and I never let anybody else drive my car. I love that car. That's fine. If the car left me tomorrow, would I feel anything other than great joy about being on this path and about living in the community and about having access to these teachings? Of course not. It wouldn't detract from my life one bit. That's the whole point, is to be moving towards not loving the things we have, not taking great care of them, not bringing in beautiful bushes. This woman really knows how to make beauty. You know, one of the first lessons I learned from Asha when I moved here, now a lot of years ago, I started doing a lot of projects with her. Whatever Asha does, whatever she does perfectly. You stay to do cleanup with Asha at the end of days that we put into making these events happen. You don't leave till everything is shining and perfect, and you don't think, I'll come back tomorrow and I'll take the compost out. No. Everything gets done. She hangs in there till everything's exactly the way she envisioned it, which is always with a lot of uplifted, beautiful energy. So you see, we're making beauty, we're keeping things perfect. Anybody could walk into my house any time of any day, and it's pretty much in really perfect order, and it's absolutely clean, and it's lovely, and it feels calm, and I love it that way. That is seeing the divine in everything and treating everything and everyone as if it's God. You make a sandwich, and I'm going to serve it at dinner or whatever I'm going to serve. I always say to people, you create this meal as if Master himself were going to come and eat it. Is that attachment? No. It's doing what is right, what is dharmic. So it's not indifferent. There's a huge difference about this. It's diving in full force with all of our energy. It's loving each person moment by moment as if you can see God in them. That's our practice of finding the divine everywhere, behaving like we're in the presence of the divine in every moment, and then walk away and be done. We're in this moment, then we're in the next moment, then we're in the next moment. That's the underlying teaching of Buddhism that is so perfect. It doesn't say don't care about anything. I'm saying it because as I listen to everybody else talk, big pitfall to think that this means indifference. And I've heard it, certainly for myself, but for many other people. Oh, yeah, I didn't do this or I didn't do that, but it must have been what Divine Mother wanted. No, it's not what Divine Mother wanted. It's what you wanted, you know? Or it's because you were lazy or because you're forgetful or because whatever it is, nothing to do. So being non-attached does not mean anything other than showing up absolutely, fully, perfectly in as many moments as we can and then leaving. And leaving that moment behind. And going on to the next moment, the next person, the next job, the next loving encounter, whatever it is, being fully present, right there, making it as beautiful as you can, buying the best that you can or whatever you need or want, and then let it go. And that's really the essence of this teaching, is to see God in everything. That's what you're serving. This, we were talking about kindness. It's about opening our hearts. What a beautiful thing. And then moving on. Are we attached to what the other person thinks? Then we get stuck. Then we have less energy. Every place that we're attached to, holding on, needing more, whether it's in the form of more material or more energy from other people, every time we can't walk away. I just give you one more example, then I'm going to stop. When I took anatomy in medical school, you know, you're working on cadavers and cutting up these bodies. The final exam in anatomy is 3 days of about 100 bodies. And each body has a little tag on something. And the tag has a question on it that you have to answer. And there's a bell that goes off every minute. So you go to one tag, what is this artery feed? You sit there, you don't know, bell rings. You move on to the next tag. What would happen if this structure, they're testing you, do you know every structure? And I remember my husband said to me, he was already a physician, he said, whatever you do, the minute you move away from one table to the next, leave the table. You're done. Show up now and now and now. Otherwise, you'll miss the next 5 answers. And it was such an important and deep lesson. And that is the lesson of non-attachment, is to do the very best you can do in every given moment and then move on.